can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He said, if you can't take these twists.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the final installment of our interviewing the different candidates for the appellate court races in Pennsylvania in 2021. This is Barnstorming PA. I'm Jordy Comis, one of the co-hosts and co-producers. If you haven't listened before, one of the many hats I wear is I'm also the vice president of the Lewisburg Borough Council. I'm always happy to talk to other people running for office because it ain't easy. Taylor?
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. As for longtime listeners, my name is Taylor Lightman, the other co-host, co-producer here at Barnstorming PA. You know, we're a podcast about politics and culture and Pennsylvania broadly. And it's a pleasure to be here. I'm so happy that we were able to get Judge Lane on. For those that are listening for the first time, we have three other podcasts with the other judges that are up for a statewide election in Pennsylvania. So we're really happy to have Judge Lane on.
Should we test ourselves, Judge Spurgeon and Judge Dumas for Commonwealth Court and Judge McLaughlin for Supreme Court?
Yes, absolutely. And I used to be in politics and now I'm in neighborhood revitalization. I love doing this stuff and so delighted to be a part of this interview today.
So Judge Lane, we'll have you say hello like briefly, and then we just need to do a little bit of housekeeping and then we'll go back to you for a little bit more of your story. So could you say hi and the race you're running for?
Sure. Hi, I'm running for Superior Court. So am I the last one of the four to be here?
Which to be fair is totally on us because we thought we'd emailed you and we had the wrong email address.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't feel as bad, but yeah, I am running for a Superior Court.
Awesome.
The only one up for Superior Court, right?
That's right. There is one seat, I am the Democratic nominee and there's a Republican nominee.
And it's an open seat. Isn't that correct?
It is because the judge is retired.
Okay.
Awesome. So we'll just review for people who maybe, you know, are newer to this. So in Pennsylvania, obviously, we elect appellate court judges to one of three appellate courts. There's the Superior Court and the Commonwealth Court. I have to make sure I get those right, which are one level below our highest court, the Supreme Court. Judges do run with a party nomination, but there are, as we understand it, there's a canon of ethical code that they have to follow, which means that judicial candidates aren't supposed to talk about particular cases or topics because they wouldn't want to bias themselves when they're executing their role as a judge, which totally makes sense. As people who follow politics, it always strikes me as a little bit odd because then we have a race where the people who we want to hold up as the most intellectually rigorous and developed running for one of the most important offices, judge, are left not able to talk about the thing they do. So it becomes a kind of an odd campaign where mostly they talk about, you know, their life story, which is, of course, is important.
Maybe we'll even talk about things happening on the federal court.
Right.
You never know.
Right. Barnstorming PA is independent media and podcasting. If you're listening to this or watching on YouTube, please do subscribe, all of that, things like, leave us reviews. If you go to barnstormingpa.org, all together, barnstormingpa.org, you can support us with a one-time donation or become a patron at different levels. One of those levels is $5.70, because 570 is our area code. So that's the kind of sense of humor we bring to things. And there is some merchandise coming along.
Yeah. If you think that's hilarious.
If that's the best joke you've heard all day, you're our niche audience.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So
let's get into it.
Do you want to do the first question, Taylor?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right, Judge Taylor. So it's not really a question. Just, you know, go ahead. Tell us a little bit your story, why you're running, who you are.
Sure. I am currently a judge on a Court of Common Pleas, which is our trial court. We talked about the Supreme Court, which is up top. Then we have Superior Court, we have Commonwealth Court, and then our trial court is a Court of Common Pleas, in which I sit. And I'm assigned to the Criminal Trial Division in major trials. So I'm the only judge that hears human trafficking cases, but I also do a lot of domestic and family violence cases, sexual assaults, rapes, and especially against children. but I do all serious felony cases. But before I even became a judge and got this this docket, this caseload that I have, I started off, I was a public school teacher before I was even, I taught seventh grade social studies and I loved it. And after that, I wound up going to law school and then I clerked for a judge on a court of common pleas. I was a child advocate, a certified child advocate, where I went in court on behalf of abused and neglected children. I was a trial attorney where I tried a lot of jury trials and bench trials where the judge makes the decision. And I did that for adults and juveniles. I worked in Harrisburg, where I was the Democratic Executive Director for the State Government Committee. When we had the photo ID law that came through, the gerrymandering met, and all those things. So it was a really busy committee. And I left that to run for the Court of Common Pleas, and I won my election in 2013.
That's I hope I don't anger the other justices we've had or judges. Sorry, you were the most succinct. A couple of them I had to be like, hold on, I got some questions.
I get to the point. That's just who I am.
No, that's great. One thing that is maybe a small thing, but I'm curious about, when you say you're the only judge who hears human trafficking cases, do you mean in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia?
No, in Philadelphia.
Okay.
In Philadelphia.
I know that a couple of years ago, a local conservatives group called Susquehanna Valley Conservatives brought in a speaker about human trafficking. And I was really struck by how that's an issue where I would think even now, after a lot of hyper-partisanship, it's a place where we could make a lot of common cause with people across the spectrum. And one reason is because it's growing and it's often not who people assume, right? It's a lot of, the victims are often not like immigrants without papers or whatever. Do you want to say any more about the
I think you're absolutely right. And, I have a daughter and she and her friends, they probably thought I was crazy, but I wanted to let them know. And to be aware of it, because so many people think that that's something that doesn't happen here. And it absolutely happens here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. It happens in our urban cities. It happens in suburban areas, as well as rural areas. So it really can be under our nose anywhere, and it goes through all different races, ethnic groups. So you can't just think, oh, it's just those people. No, it can happen to anyone. And people sometimes assume that it's just female, and it's not. It's male as well. They do that to boys. And I'm talking about the sexual part, but there's also a labor trafficking part as well. Mm. People don't always think about that other component. And I think it's so good that you're talking about it and bringing awareness of it. And I'm an adjunct professor too at Harcum College. And I do a whole segment on that. No matter what I'm teaching, I always make sure I talk about that to make sure that we have awareness, because some, like I said, people weren't even talking about it. I've been talking about it well before it started being more commonplace, because I wanted people to understand. And people in the beginning just shrugged me off. Oh, that's not here. That's over in some third world country. That's here, that's there. I'm like, no, it's here. And then you start giving them stats of this is what happened in your city. And the people are just astounded.
What sort of cases would you hear trafficking cases on the Superior Court? We haven't interviewed anybody from the that's running for the Superior Court yet. So I'm a little unaware of what kind of cases you would hear if elected.
No, that's a really great question. So in a court of common pleas, we deal with criminal matters, civil matters, family matters, anything dealing with children, as well as wills and estates. So if you lose at trial, you have an absolute right to have a direct appeal, and it goes to the Superior Court. So it's all the same areas of law. And what the Superior Court is, it's not a trial court. Like the Commonwealth is a hybrid. The Commonwealth Court, they hear trials as well as they're an appellate court. Superior Court is all appellate court. So it's not a trial. You're not going to have witness testimony. You're not taking evidence in. What it is that if you would have oral arguments if that, but what you're doing is that you're looking at a cold record from the trial to see if any errors occurred. So it's very unique in that sense.
And it's all criminal stuff.
No, it's criminal, it's civil, it's family, okay. Dealing with children, wills and estates. It's all the same areas of law that I have now on a court of common pleas. I'm just assigned to the criminal division, but with the Superior Court, there is no division. You do all of those areas of law on a
And the Commonwealth is just things involving the state. That's just so everything involving the state, so to speak.
The state, cities, you know, governmental agencies. Yeah.
That's in the Commonwealth. And y'all are handling everything else.
Yes, because I don't know if you knew this, but the Commonwealth Court was created in 1968, and it's a piece, it came from the Superior Court. Court was the only court we had, and it has such a heavy load that the Commonwealth Court came from that. And then after the Commonwealth Court was created, they also increased the number of judges on the Superior Court. And that's why currently the Superior Court, they have 15 judges, and it's the busiest appellate court in the country. They've heard over 8,000 cases last year alone. Like, it's a really busy court.
So what's in the water in Pennsylvania? Because, like, I've been told that the Commonwealth Court were the only state in the union to have something like it. And you just said we have the busiest Superior Court, which has an analog or parallel in other states. I mean, are we particularly litigious? I'm just really showing off my SAT vocabulary here.
I love it. You know what? That's a good question. I know that we are just really busy. And we have a direct appeal. And then with our Pennsylvania Constitution, it actually afforded more rights than you do with the U.S. Constitution.
That may be part of it then, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also know that we imprison and parole at higher rates. Like, I've seen some of those statistics. So people don't realize that. But we have, you know, if we want to talk about which you're in a much better position than me, but sort of the school to prison, like, pipeline kinds of arguments. My understanding, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that we have a very high incarceration rate in Pennsylvania.
Well, we do. The last time I saw something from the Sentencing Commission, it was before COVID. And I know that with COVID, a lot of people were getting out. There were a lot of different parts mm-hmm. moving. So I don't have the updated numbers, but mm-hmm. I know that they did look at that. They also looked at the amount of probation that was also given out, which could be a higher number than in other parts. And that's why I'm so lucky that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court appointed me co-chair to the County Commission on Adult Probation and Parole Advisory Committee, because we get to look at these issues. We get to see how can we improve it and make sure that when people are on probation and parole, that they are being rehabilitated, they're getting everything that they need. But we're also making sure that the probation officers and the parole agents also have what they need to be successful, so that it's a win-win for everybody. And that's something that was born out of the legislature. And I believe it was a couple years ago. So it's a fairly new legislation and committee, and we fall under the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency.
I want to go back to trafficking here. Since you have this background, like, this is the kinds of things that you're hearing right now, and you're also teaching about trafficking, isn't that correct?
Yes.
What sorts of, like you bring all of this knowledge, but like, how would this impact your role in the Superior Court? Like, why do you think, like, what can you take from there to the Superior Court?
That's an excellent question. And what you take from that as being a trial judge is invaluable. If we currently look at the composition of the Superior Court, 11 of the 14 judges were all judges first. And that's because that judicial experience matters. Being in that chair on the bench, wearing a black robe, making those hard, tough decisions that you know impact people immediately will impact them and people that they care about and care about them. So that is something that only a person who's been in that seat in that position actually knows. When I was a trial lawyer, you know, you think, oh, I could do this. When I was a law clerk, I was like, oh, yeah. But when you actually are in that position as a judge, it's very different than anything I ever expected it to be. And I think that's part of why the majority of the Superior Court judges were judges first, because when you're looking at a cold record, who best can do that than someone who's actually tried those cases, been in those positions, and you know what to look for and you know how to address it. It's just an invaluable experience. And with human trafficking and doing that, because we are seeing these cases, like, my schedule is loaded, you know, with a lot of co-defendant cases that because of COVID, the way it was handled in the first judicial district that I'm in, we weren't able to do the co-defendant cases until recently. So now I have a whole slew.
Tell me what that is, what a co-defendant case is.
That's when two people are arrested in a conspiracy for doing the same crime. So I'll give you an example. I had a human trafficking case with this young lady. She ran away. She was 15. Within 3 days, she was trafficked to over 30 people.
Whoa. And
there were various co-defendants. And and they made her crawl and eat out of a dog bowl. And so one guy would take her to, quote unquote, the dates, and he would sit there and watch and make sure that she did what she had to do. Another person was in charge of making sure, you know, she didn't get out of the room when she came back from her dates. So all these people were co-conspirators because they were all into the same criminal enterprise together. So they were co-defendants.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to lay that out.
No. In fact, there was a case here in the local paper. It wasn't the local paper. It was on Penn Live, which I try and look at. It wasn't the arrest. That was like in January, but it was a couple who had adopted 4 children and were horribly abusing them. And it seemed from the newspaper article that the motivation was financial, right? That they would basically starve and deprive them and then kept getting money from the state. And this is a little bit out there, so you don't really need to respond, but it just reminds me that, like, broadly, I feel like in our society, we moved away from institutions that care for people, whether it's mental institutions or orphanages, you know, that has a bad reputation. And for sure, there are lots of horrible things that went on. But if your alternative is a system where you have 100 kids distributed with, you know, 50 families and you have overworked social workers trying to keep an eye on them, I'm not sure that that's better, right? Like, then if you have a well-run institution that has a lot of oversight and you have a staff that really, you know, cares for children and are professionals, like there was another case in our area where a woman was prosecuted because of how she was handling a child with huge kinds of developmental issues and she was prosecuted for probably rightly for how she treated that child. But part of me was like, but was she even equipped to bring that kind of a child into her home? Like, what are we doing? So I don't know. I just have a question in my mind about whether the whole system where we've basically outsourced caring for people who don't have a family to care for them is really that great, because it seems like it's open to abuses.
Well, I think that the system and systems definitely could be improved. And since I've been a judge, I've just been in the adult division. I haven't been in family, but Judges Dumas and Judge Spurgeon, they were. You know, Judge Spurgeon, since he's been on the bench, has been in family court, and Judge Dumas spent 15 years in family court. So they probably could address it even
than
I could.
Sorry, that was really outside the bounds. It's part of it. It was kind of like maybe something I've noticed, which is, and both of those judges have experience with this, and you do too, but like when our courts start to look something like a social service agency, mm-hmm. right? Like a drug court, or, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know if you've had that experience with the trafficking issue, like that seems great, right? Like you have somebody who comes before you. Maybe I'll just make this question, like in your work, are there times where as a judge, you're not just issuing a ruling, but you're connecting to other parts of the social safety net to help people? So maybe I should just put that as a question. Has that been part of your experience?
Well, as a trial judge, I would have to say no, because I do adult criminal. And okay. That's a very different approach to juveniles. So adult criminal, you come in and you have your day. Do you want to trial before me, or do you want to trial, you know, with the jury of your peers? And that's what I do. But I think the back end would come is if they were found guilty and they're on probation or parole, then that's when I can order all those services to help. Right. And that's what I do, because right. I don't want them to come back. I want them to get help. I want them to be better. And sometimes people come before me, they just had a bad day, but they're not bad people. And other times they're just really bad people. Mm-hmm. But you have to be able to make a distinction. You know, I had a football coach who molested his whole team of boys between the ages of 9 and 11 and the mentally disabled water boy who was 21 years old as soon as he maxed out of a juvenile facility for molesting his 3-year-old sister. So you have to make a distinction between that person and someone who maybe, you know, is not doing great and stole some deodorant from Rite Aid. You know, it's very different situations.
Absolutely. And I think maybe this will kind of tie together what I was talking about and back to a little bit of your background that I was curious about. So the context here is, you know, you talked about different experiences as a teacher, as a child advocate, working in Harrisburg on the legislative side. And especially compared to some of our Supreme Court justices we have who like go to law school, go right to clerking, right? And then go right into, it seems like, the judiciary. And I say this as somebody who was a professor, like there can be a walling off of those highly specialized professional people. Like, of course they need the training, but mm-hmm. like I think about Judge O'Connor on the Supreme Court, who had been, I think, the governor of Arizona and also been an ambassador. Like, you're bringing a different experience about the law right? In terms of the work you did, you said for this state government committee, which is so important. So do you want to maybe reflect more on that? Like what is it about your experience, especially in Harrisburg? Because now you're interpreting law and applying law, but you were part of seeing how laws get made. Like, do you feel like that, how does that affect how you would do
it? I think that actually was very helpful. So I can see the process of how you draft, you know, a bill and all that entails, how you research things to make sure that they can pass their constitutional muster. I think you look at how it's going to impact people if it's passed. But what it also does is that because I was the Democratic chair, the minority chair, we also had a Republican chair that we had to work very closely with because we had to do the committee. We had to formulate how it would be done. Of course, they had more say because, you know, they were in charge when I was in the Senate. We were not in the majority and have not been. But we had a really cordial relationship. And I think that teaches you, again, that let's try to find that common ground. Let's see how we can work together. You know, we don't have to be adversaries because there are some things that are going to benefit everyone in this Commonwealth. And I think that sometimes that gets lost when people look at Harrisburg now. And, you know, I'm lucky I had that experience. And even when I was there, the women attorneys, because there weren't a lot of us, we all went out together for lunch once a year. It was the Republican and Democratic women. It was a very small group of us, but we all did that because I think that we have to do our best to try to find common ground to benefit everybody.
I'm curious about something you mentioned with the 15 justices on the Superior Court. Do all 15 hear all the appeals or?
Mm-hmm. Oh, everybody's working. Everybody. Okay. Oh, yeah. But
are you all working on the same case at once? Like, no, are there 15 sets of eyes?
No, you have an assignment. So everyone will get a certain number of cases. You know, you sit in panels of three and then you decide that way, unless it's a really, really important issue. And then there will be an inbox panel where the judges will decide because it'll have a more far reaching impact to the citizens of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I have a different question, which I wanted to ask somebody for a long time because I just don't.
Oh, gosh. What is it?
What is an arraignment? I hear these terms like arrest, arraignment, indict. I don't understand what is the difference between an arraignment and an indictment. And I watch enough legal dramas, not like a lot, but I hear these terms thrown out and I have no idea what the difference is between an arraignment, an arrest, an indictment. I think I know what a conviction is.
So when you get arraigned, that's just a formal arraignment. So you are told of what charges you are, that you're facing. Also the arraignment, that's when bail is set. There are two different types. So when you're first arrested, you are brought before, it depends on where you are in the state. But like in Philadelphia, you're brought before a bail commissioner where they tell you your charge, they'll set your bail. But there's also the formal arraignment that once you've been, they have to show that a crime was committed and more likely than not, you committed it. And if the Commonwealth can show that they have met that burden, then you will get formally arraigned of your charges again. But an indictment is when you would have like a grand jury or something of that nature, and then they will come back and find those charges.
Okay. So it's like different, sort of, and I should probably just go look it up, but
you should basically
because
I have a different question that's
well,
it's
the heart of it is this. I mean, I hear about grand juries, and I mean, are there grand juries in state law or is that only federal?
No, we do grand juries here in the Commonwealth, very okay. common. Yeah.
And
we have indicting grand juries and investigative grand juries, absolutely.
Okay, well, I'm just going to stop there because now these are new things that I don't know what they are. But I think it does show that like there is so much important information about how our legal system works that a lot of people don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is backtracking a little bit, but I just checked our notes and I want to make sure that we ask this question. Why did you choose the Superior Court as you could have chosen to run for Supreme Court or Commonwealth Court or some like a district attorney or something like that. Why did you choose to pursue this option?
I think it goes back to what we were talking about with the areas of law, how they are identical and how you have an absolute right to appeal to the Superior Court if you lose at the Court of Common Pleas where mm-hmm. I am. So that is definitely what interests me. And it also, because as a judge in Philadelphia, I try to make a positive impact in my community and on the citizens there. And I feel like running for the Superior Court, I can do that, but on a greater level, because it would impact all of the citizens of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And that's why I've been going around. I've been to almost all 67 counties in Pennsylvania, because I think it's so important to see Pennsylvania from the urban areas to the suburban to the rural areas. They all matter and everyone is important. And if you get a case from an area, I would like to say, oh, I've been there, and try to, you know, pull some of what I know about it. I think that that's important.
I mean, that sort of gets to a common theme and a critique that, you know, we've made, which isn't rocket science, but when some judges are being, you know, Supreme Court judges, or I saw this, not your opponent Sullivan, but one of the others running for one of the other appellate courts, said, my job is not to make law, to interpret the law. And that just really grates on me, because it's honestly so naive, right? Like, if the law were that simple that it just needed to be interpreted, we wouldn't need judges, right? It would be like a computer. So obviously, you know, the law can only do some things. And I understand this from a very, very micro way, because like, we can pass an ordinance at the local level that deals with signs. And this came up the other day, and then somebody said, well, is my sign gaudy? Because you say signs can't be gaudy. And I'm like, I mean,
yeah, that's why we have judges.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly. So that wasn't really, really a question, but it was about just like, why.
I'm sure your sign was fantastic.
I maybe one thing, and I don't know how much you can say about this, but obviously Black Lives Matter, when it started some number of years ago in Missouri,
2013.
And last summer, you know, I'll say for just me personally, the rural Black Lives Matter movement was real. There were dozens of events all over where we are, activated a lot of people. And I am actually also a police commissioner. It's like a double whammy with my borough council. And I feel like I spend a lot of time just turning the wheels of the system that is, you know, passing budgets, doing this or that. And then there was this moment of like searing clarity that there are real problems in racial imbalances in our justice system. So does who we elect as judges matter, or do we have to change the laws? Does that make sense as a question?
Like, I think it absolutely matters who we elect as a judge. But first of all, I want to say thank you for your service. My mom is a retired police detective, so I know how hard you work. And then you're a commissioner, so that's a whole different level. And I know that with everything that's happened within the last year or 2 years, that I've gone to a lot of events, community events, where they are partner with community organizations as well as the police department, so that everyone can get to know each other. I teach civics. Also, I was co-chair of Advanced in Civics Education with the Philadelphia Bar Association. And we would go into public school. So when all this happened, this was before COVID, we actually brought in some police officers to talk to those kids. And that was the first time a lot of them had ever been able to have a discussion. Like, they felt heard. You know, we started off, they hated the police when we started. And then they explained why they felt that way. And by the end, they were like, oh, you're not so bad. Like, you're real people. And I think a lot of times what's missing is this dialogue and a mutual respect. And those kids, you know, I really saw how their posture changed, their demeanor changed from when the police officers first came in, because for some of them, they had never had a positive interaction until that time. And I think that we had to just keep having these dialogues, because you know, it is really important for people to feel like that they're heard, they're listened to, and that they're cared about. And I think that was what happened with these children, you know, with that discussion. And imagine that on just a larger level.
And what do you think you can do from the bench to sort of bridge that divide?
Well, I don't know if it's quote unquote bridge a divide, but I'm really active in the community. I think that people need to know the judge and know what we do, know what the judicial system is and why it's important and why it matters. When you elect a judge, we're elected to 10-year terms and often sit for 20 to 30 years. So we need people from the communities and understand communities. You know, you don't want someone who you never see again, and that they can't go out there and be a positive impact. And I think that's what, I don't want to say separates me, but I mean, if you look at Judge McLaughlin, Judge Dumas, Judge Spurgeon, we're all active in the community because it matters. we are not here to just hide out. No, we have to make sure people understand, like, Commonwealth Court exists. Why the judicial system operates like it is. Why do judges matter? Why is this whole system this way? And people need to understand that. And that's why I love going and talking to kids and then still being, you know, a teacher. I get to have the best of both worlds in that aspect.
So I'm trying to picture, like, a case comes before the Superior Court that's an appeal of a criminal conviction. And the person who was convicted, like, from their perspective, they have an attorney, right, who presents why their case should be examined. And let's say part of it was that they think that the police misbehaved in a way that has racial prejudice. You know, as the judge, like, are you just listening to the arguments from the two attorneys, or do you have the power to like ask follow questions? You said there's no new evidence presented in an appellate case, but I'm just.
No, it's not. Not at the Superior Court. It's not. It's a cold record. You look and see what happened there. You have a transcript of the complete record. And if you have oral argument, then you can ask questions. Just like when we watch on TV, we see the Supreme Court and, you know, they would ask questions during oral argument. It's the
same. Oh, so in the oral argument, you could.
Yeah, an oral argument, yes.
Okay. Because I think that for me, trying to understand this, that is where both your qualifications and then life experience do matter. Because, and I'm just thinking about this as from my little keyhole view of the world, but like knowing whether or not to sort of follow up on like a question about like, did this officer have the right training? Or, you know, you said there have been other incidents in this department. So I'm sort of imagining the person who's proposing the appeal, mm-hmm. like certain judges may not do the kinds of follow-up questions that would surface the racial prejudicial element, right? That's what I'm trying to say. And I know that you can't necessarily say that, but like that is what we're hoping for, right? Like judges who are, regardless of the color of their skin, who are more knowledgeable about the world as it is, will be better in that moment of understanding the nuance or the thing that's not being said that needs to be surfaced. I mean,
you know what? And it's important that you have a judge who's actually lived a real life. You know, I come from this part of Philadelphia. It's called the bottom. It's like the other side of the tracks. You know, I didn't come from a lot of money, but I came from a strong sense of community. I'm first generation college, first generation law school. You know, I had to work hard for everything that I've ever had. And I also was a cancer survivor. So I had to fight for that. You know, my mother had to move in because I'm a single mom.
My wife is a breast cancer survivor.
Oh, thank you. Tell her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I still actually volunteer with the Cancer Hope Network, too, even while I'm campaigning. And they're like, are you too busy? I'm like, I'm never too busy for that because it's so important. But I think we need people who've actually experienced things. You know, when my mother had to move in, I was scared to death, you know, and all my treatment. I had to make sure my will was intact and all these different things. Like, you need people who understand real life, because when people are coming before the court, that's real life stuff right there. And you need people who can distinguish between those different things. Like I told you, between a bad person and a good person who just had a bad day, you need someone who can decipher.
Right. We're going to move to the opponents, but I just, you know, one last thing, which is, you know, we should maybe do one with your mom. I don't want to ask your, I don't want to ask your age, but she had to be on the front lines of breaking a lot of glass ceilings as an African-American female police detective in Philly. Am I right?
Well,
she was one of the first.
She was not one of the first, but there were not a lot of them. And she and her partner, so my mother, you know, we're from West Philly, and then her partner was real Italian from South Philly, and they were like the best. Like those women were badass, if I could say.
You can curse all you want.
I think that's a TV show right there.
I was just thinking that.
we'll talk off pod and see if we can put a pitch together.
That's amazing. Silly. All right. Do you want to do the opponent's question, Taylor?
Yeah. So I'm actually a little in the dark on this. So this isn't purposeful, or this isn't purposeful naivete. But what differentiates you the most from your opponent?
Besides the obvious that I'm the only judge in the race. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge difference. You know, not only do I have that trial experience as a lawyer, but I also presided over thousands of cases as a judge and made those tough decisions.
And were they like a prosecutor or something like that? Or a defense? Like,
she did a lot of civil
law.
she did some criminal prosecution, and she also did civil litigation, and she's the general counsel for Westchester University. Sorry, I was just looking at it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So experience matters, and having somebody that's a judge is the key differentiation between y'all.
It's also a real Philly throwdown. I mean, you know, it's not one of some of the races where there's one judge from Philly and one from Pittsburgh or whatever. So, you know, probably the person who does better in Pittsburgh, just because that's where there's a lot of people. Neither one of you has a home advantage in one area or the other.
Have you met your opponent?
I did. We met in Crawford County, but, you know, I was born and raised here and has okay. lived here. So I think that's a key distinction as well.
Crawford County.
Yeah, we met in Crawford County.
Recently? Am I right? Crawford County is nowhere. Okay. Yeah. You weren't both practicing law in Crawford County is what I was trying to get.
No. We went for a candidate form. Okay. Yeah. Right. Then I went to the fair afterwards and had the best funnel cake of my life.
No.
Yes. Yeah.
I always feel like that good. The every bite of
cowboy popcorn. My gosh. I'm into cowboy popcorn. I don't even someone's like
what is that?
Popcorn? I've never even heard of it.
Just delicious.
What's cowboy popcorn?
What is it?
I don't know. It was good. I just know I liked it.
I always feel that every bite of funnel cake is not as good as the bite I just had, right? The first bite is great, and everyone after, I feel more.
No, that other one was good. I was like, I'm going to come back to Crawford County just to get some more of that funnel cake. That was the best one I had.
Should we move to the game? Is that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so we have this.
What kind of game is this? Like, The Price is Right?
No.
It's even better. It's called Judge This, and it's we play this with all of our judicial candidates, and
we're gonna use your learned opinion about topics that have high passion and low consequences.
Okay, yeah.
But you know, we'll see your judicial temperament too. You know.
Okay, so the first one is, which is better, Star Wars or Star Trek?
I'm gonna have to go with Star Wars. I love some Princess Leia, and I used to wear my hair like that.
Yeah, that's great. I'm a Star Wars guy too. What can I say?
I still want to be a Jedi when I grow up. All right, what's the next one?
Are we still in the TV realm?
Sure.
Okay. So what do you think is the best legal drama? SVU or, what was the other? Better Call Saul.
Better Call Saul.
I'm going to say SVU. Okay. Law and Order SVU.
Law and Order SVU. Yeah. You didn't even give her the Law and Order. I mean, she really had to know what it was.
I probably watch like every episode.
Really? Okay. So I've always wonder whether people in the legal profession do actually watch them or they find them really infuriating. Like every now and then when there's something that's about education. I was a middle school teacher also. Usually things about – yeah.
I taught social studies. What did you teach?
Espanol.
Ah.
But mostly actually that was a part of my job. I was mostly running a nonprofit program for – disadvantaged middle school kids to be able to get ahead in school.
Have you watched Better Call Saul though?
I have not. I hadn't even heard of it.
You hadn't even heard of it. That's what I kept saying to Taylor.
So we had a whole conversation about this as to whether or not to include it. You know, it could have been like SVU or LA Law or something like that.
Kept saying LA Law, which is the one I remember.
I knew LA Law from back in the day, but SVU, it seems like, it's so on point.
It doesn't grate your teeth when they get 99% of, they probably get 99% of policing and law wrong, right? Like that doesn't bother you, or are you just able to look at it as like, it's just a show?
It's good. But you know what? Then I couldn't watch it anymore. Cause I think I just do too much at work. Like I couldn't watch it anymore.
Yeah. It's not exactly.
Back in the day before I really was doing this every day.
So well, do you have a recommendation while we're on this real quick? Is there something that you recommend, book or movie or TV that, you know, we should all be checking out?
No. According to my daughter, I have the worst taste in everything. I love historical fiction, like Philippa Gregory. Like,
yeah.
My daughter's like, don't tell anyone.
All right.
Yeah. Whatever you do, don't say that. So there's one more TV question then, actually.
Oh, there is. Okay. I don't remember it.
Best
anti-hero. Best anti-hero.
Yeah.
Tony Soprano from The Sopranos or
Walter White from Breaking Bad.
I think Tony Soprano is just legendary. I know it's probably wrong to say.
No, they're both anti-heroes. They're both in this, you know.
I think everybody has said Tony Soprano too, all of the judges.
Right.
So it's interesting sociologically.
Yes, absolutely.
But The Sopranos is back, so
There you go. I haven't seen that.
It's
what is it, a new version?
There's a movie out.
There is, well, it's with Tony Soprano's son.
It's not Tony Soprano's son. It's Michael Gandolfini's son.
Michael Gandolfini. Yeah.
The son of the actor.
James Gandolfini's.
Michael Gandolfini. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Sorry. His son is in this movie called Saints of Newark, I think.
Yeah. But there is also a resurgence in interest in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to talk about food for a second. First of all, do you know what a Pittsburgh salad is?
Oh my God! Is that the salad with French fries on it?
Yes.
Yes, because I'm friends with Judge Spurgeon.
Yes. So.
Yeah. The only reason you'd know.
what's your go-to? A cheesesteak or a Pittsburgh salad?
Cheesesteak.
I mean, we sort of knew, but.
And do you have a cheesesteak that you like? I know the big hullabaloo is about Pat's first Geno's, but after talking with Judge McLaughlin, we've realized
that's just for the tourists.
This is for the tourists. Yeah,
she had her own. Yeah,
I do too. Overbrook Pizza.
Oh,
okay.
Now, I really like making what I call a cheesesteak, and I've spent some time as a professional chef. I use real cheese, right? I just can't do the Cheese Whiz. Is that still a cheese?
I don't do that Cheese Whiz either. Most people in Philly, like native born, we don't do Cheese Whiz. We do cheese.
Yeah, I'm just like
provolone.
I'm like, yeah, exactly, provolone. Sometimes I do a little provolone and a little Parmesan for a little more zest.
Oh, you're fancy.
Well,
I'm just old school, basic, just a regular cheesesteak with American cheese.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then how about this? Would you between a Altoona pizza and a Pittsburgh salad?
Does she even know what Altoona pizza is?
I haven't had Altoona pizza. I had pizza in Luzerne County.
No, this is from the Altoona Hotel in Pittsburgh. We've only read about it. I've never tried it.
I've never tried it.
Let me tell you, I was in Altoona and I didn't even know. I would have got
it. I'm not sure they serve an Altoona. It's called the Altoona Pizza because it comes from the Altoona Hotel in Pittsburgh.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we're still learning about this. I understand, I've seen an article about it. It's the crust with a tomato sauce, and then the minimum is a square of American cheese. So it's cut square. So what you get is a square of pizza crust with a tomato sauce with a slice of American cheese. Sometimes it has a green pepper.
With American cheese?
Yes, and sometimes it has a piece of salami and a piece of green pepper sliced and cracked black pepper on top. I will say,
very different.
It's very different. Yeah. I will say that may be very good. I'm not sure it's pizza. You know, I'm not sure that you can put American cheese on something and call it pizza.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, I need a little mozzarella.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for real.
Mm-hmm. All right,
I'm not knocking it. I don't want anybody mad at me at Apple.
Yeah, I'll try anything once. Should we do the last one here? Or we have two more about government.
Oh, yeah. So do you think that it should be... So the department that figures out voting and everything like that, the Department of State, should it be the Department of State or the Department of Commonwealth, though? That's the question.
Because we're a Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
It's very confusing to say the Commonwealth's Department of State.
Yeah.
I asked the governor that once in a public forum, and he was amused. And he looked at the Cortez, the former Secretary of State, and he was like, yeah, we talk about that sometimes.
That's funny.
So you're on board for Department of Commonwealth. Okay, the last one, and this is very important to Taylor and I.
Yeah.
When we think about the form that we use to circulate petitions, right? So I'm sure you've done this. And normally it's laid out landscape. So when you get to it, you have to fill in all that information in a pretty narrow space. Mm-hmm. Do you agree?
Or rather, it's portrait. It's portrait.
Yes, well, I'm sorry. It's portrait. It's long
ways. I know what you meant. Yeah, I know.
Yes, I got dyslexic. Should it stay as it is, portrait, long ways, or should it reorient 90 degrees and be landscape so there would be more room for people to put information?
Yeah, but then you wouldn't get as many names. See, the way it is now, you can get so many more names on a page.
That's because it's legal, but you could do legal landscape. Yeah, that's a good answer. That's a very sophisticated answer.
Yeah.
So you're going to stick with portrait?
You guys are something else. You guys are funny.
Wait until you see our comedy show.
Yeah. Here all week. what are there any more questions, Jordy?
No, this is thank you so much for running. You know, please, if you, people are listening, please, the judge, as I understand it, isn't allowed to directly ask for money. We can. Please go to, if you Google Tamika Lane Judge, you come to her website. I know I was looking at it a second ago. What is the website?
It's judgelane.com.
Judgelane.com. It's, yeah. It costs money to run, and I think your experience, yeah, your experiences in life as a teacher. I love that you were a teacher and you worked in Harrisburg and you were a child advocate and a defense attorney. I'm so excited for you to win and be on the court. And we didn't lean into this a lot, but also the court, for God's sakes, it's like, was it 33 total in the three courts? And there's one
31.
Carolyn Nichols, 31. This is ridiculous. This is the time for the court to look like what real Pennsylvania looks like.
It's just Judge Nichols, right?
Yeah, it is.
Correct.
Yeah. 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 How can people keep up with your campaign if they want to learn more or follow along on social media? Where can they find this information, Judge Lane?
Well, if they went to judgelane.com and list all my social media hashtags, because I'm on Facebook, Instagram, I'm on Twitter, but I definitely don't even know how to use Twitter. I am so challenged. So
that's probably better. Twitter is
well, not a place for follow me. So you right. can see as I crisscross this beautiful Commonwealth of ours.
All right. Do you have a favorite stop that you've made so far? Or I mean,
oh,
I just crossed the county.
That.
No, well, you know what? I've really, Pennsylvania is beautiful. And yeah. I've always heard that. I've seen some of it, but not to the degree that I've seen it, of course, now. I think it's, I just love it. You know, if I'm in Elk, Pennsylvania, I see elk. Then where was I that I saw these bison?
I've never been to Elk County.
Where was I? I was going to, was I in Somerset? Going to Somerset? I don't know where I was, but I saw like a whole herd of bison. Like, it's just beautiful.
That is a long drive from Philadelphia County.
Yeah, and Erie. I mean, all of it is just beautiful. We really are blessed to have a beautiful county.
For sure.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Awesome. I'm going to end the...
Waterloo, Lackawanna, Fairview, Bellevue, Sweet Roots, Susquehanna, Lewisburg, Stroudsburg, Gillysburg, Orbisonia, Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Wellesburg, Robsonia, Mountaintop, Glen Rock, Flat Rock, Sunbury, St. Mary, Schick, Shanny, Big Shanny, I'm a Danny. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valley stair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Belfont, Southmont, Westmont, Womelsdorf, Nordmont, Dormont, Lebanon, Holmes, Wharf, Cedar Springs, Bowling Springs, Chess Springs, Center Bridge, Centersport, Leesport, Williamsport.